Last week, we got to hear from Pastor Mark Harris, and so I'm sitting in the row over there, and he gets up and he puts up his first slide. Says, getting along with Jesus, walking by faith. And I sat there and I went, oh man, that's what I was gonna preach on. It's like, okay, all right. And so I'm kind of brainstorming real quickly, and I just felt the Holy Spirit say, nope, just, continue on, keep going with what you got and what you're doing. And so you're not getting a human-intended, mini-series on faith, but maybe think of it this way. You're getting a Holy Spirit-intended mini-series on faith. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And so, but man, if you missed last week, it was really good. Pastor Mark, he really nailed it with walking by faith. He talked about how walking by faith, is loving God above all others. He talked about how that is it's obedience. It's also trusting him in his faithfulness and his goodness, and it's also humility. And those are absolutely the components to walking by faith. And so this week, I just want to continue on with that conversation, and kind of talk about, a little bit different aspect of faith that I think all of us face, man, just about every day in our lives. So do any of you remember chat rooms on the internet? I hear some chuckles. This would have been back in the late 90s and early 2000s. Chat rooms were all the thing. The internet was fairly young. It hadn't been around for too terribly long. And there are these sites called chat rooms that popped up. And if you're not familiar with what chat rooms are, what it is it's just it's a website where people can go on to, they can create a username, and then you're essentially in kind of like this, like, open chat forum. And so you're in real time, or as real as you can get with dial-up back then. some of you know what I'm talking about, right? But people would kind of, they would throw comments, they'd have conversations, And at that time, this would have been right around 1999, 2000, right around that area. I had just, spent a year at Bible college, and so I was just fresh a year out of Bible college, discovered these chat rooms. And they were about any kind of topic you'd ever think of that you wanted to talk about. And so you could find some about, Christianity, about the Bible, And so I was all about that. I was like, man, I'm going to go to those chat rooms. I mean, I've got a year of Bible college under my belt. I took basic doctrine, so I pretty much know everything about the Bible. And so I'm going to run in there, and I'm going to start, hitting up these chat groups. And, it never fails. It's like, you're sitting, and then there's usually three or four conversations happening at the same time. So you got to pick your thread that you want to follow, And you try to type, and inevitably somebody types, three or four paragraphs. And so you look up to try to make sure you're answering the question, and it's gone. And there's like five or six paragraphs right there. It was kind of a crazy thing, but there was always one or two individuals that would log in as like devil worshiper or I hate God or something like that. And they were just in there just to kind of, stir up trouble and kind of do some ridiculous things, make some ridiculous statements. But I remember one time in there, I don't know who it was, but all of a sudden this question popped up, is God in hell, And of course, the answer started flying, no way, God's not in hell, no way, all this stuff. And I was right on board. I was like, who's this guy think he is? He must not have gone to Bible school and taken basic doctrine, But then that same person says, well, then how is God everywhere at all times? I was stunned. Like, I don't know, And so I was really stumped, and it really shocked me, that a simple question like that could just rattle me, could just really challenge me and really challenge my faith as far as, what I really knew, who I really was, and I didn't know what to do, so like any other good person, I just left the chat room, I took a break. I was like, I'm just going to back out a little bit. I'll let some other people entangle in that argument with them. But, how often, And I think this happens a lot more often than we think, that we are absolutely challenged in our faith very, very often, like all the time, you know. Now, it may not be a direct challenge. It may not be somebody walking up to you and say, you know, I challenge what you believe, you know, and I'm going to throw out these crazy statements that are going to, you know, rattle your belief in God and cause you to fall away and slip away. It's not always like that, you know. They're not going to always have these outrageous, you know, questions or statements. But there are other challenges in our faith, you know. Sometimes it may be financial, you know. How many times have you looked at your checkbook or your online banking register and you saw the balance and you looked at the pile of bills and you added all those up and the numbers did not add up? I mean, there were much more that had to go out than was coming in. You know, that's a challenge in our faith. You know, or maybe, you know, you've got this career decision, you know, especially with young adults, we always talk about making these big decisions all the time. How do we make these decisions, you know? It seems like sometimes there's no right answer. It doesn't matter which direction we go, there's not going to be a right answer. You know, that's a challenge in our faith. Relationships, boy, relationships can be a huge challenge in our faith. You know, especially as believers, you know, we feel pressure that, oh, you know, I got to meet, you know, somebody that has, you know, the same, that's a Christian. First, they got to be a Christian, right? You know, second, they got to follow the same slice of doctrine that I follow, you know, and we put all these pressures, you know, and again, you know, we're not meeting people, we're not getting into the relationships we want to. Again, that's a challenge in our faith. And so what I want to talk to you guys about this morning is what happens when our faith is challenged, you know? What do we do? What do we do when we're faced with those situations? Because we are faced with those situations every single day of our lives. We may not know it, we may not be aware of it, but we are. We are faced with challenges in our faith all the time. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look in the Old Testament to find out how we can do this, how we can handle this. And I'm going to go to a book that maybe not a lot of people are familiar with. We're going to go to Habakkuk, all right? Now, Habakkuk is, it's a tiny book. It's a minor prophet. And so in the Old Testament, you have what are major prophets, and those are the much longer prophetic books after Psalms and Song of Solomon, Lamentations. And then you have the minor prophet books. Which, you know, they have names like Haggai and Habakkuk, you know, so they're not read too much, but, you know, I found that in Habakkuk, man, we could really make a discovery about what happens when we're challenged in our faith, right? Now, to give you a little background about Habakkuk, okay, Habakkuk is about 300 years after the split of the Israeli kingdom. Okay, so what happened is they were united as one kingdom under Saul, David, and Solomon, okay? And then they had a civil war within themselves, and they split. They split into the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. The northern kingdom was mostly mostly 10 tribes of Israel, and the southern kingdom was mostly the tribe of Judah and the Levites, okay? Now, it didn't stay absolutely split like that. There were some from the northern kingdom that did migrate down because they didn't like what was happening up there. But for the most part, you know, it was 10 tribes in the north and then the Levites and Judah down in the south. And they were referred to mostly as the kingdom of Judah down there or the southern kingdom. And sometimes they're just referred to as Israel. So, you know, when we read about that, we kind of got to look at the context to see, you know, what and who they're talking about. And so, and then about 200 years after that split, the northern kingdom was taken over by the Assyrians. Okay, they're a nasty group of people that came in, took over the northern kingdom, and oftentimes what God did is he would send a group of people in to capture at that time they exiled the Israelites. It was a form of like judgment and correction. See, what happened in the northern kingdom is that they decided they didn't want to worship God anymore, and so they kind of fell into pagan worship. They were worshiping idols, and God had specifically told them, "Hey, you need to worship me and worship me alone." And so, essentially, they were disobedient, and so God sent judgment to them, and you know, sent the Assyrians, and they captured the northern kingdom. Now, the Assyrians did come down into Jerusalem. They besieged the city, but they left the southern kingdom intact, which is very interesting, very, very interesting. And so if you want to do a little study on your own, a little bunny trail, you know, it's God's extremely intentional about what he does with that southern kingdom and keeping them intact. But anyway, that's another bunny trail, another message. But, you know, we're sticking with Habakkuk, right? Okay, we're gonna stay there. So then when Habakkuk rolls around, you know, it's about 100 years after the Assyrians came in and took over the northern kingdom, right? And Habakkuk, he's starting to observe the actions of Judah, of what they're doing, how they're acting. They're starting to get into idol worship. They're starting to worship pagan gods. And they're also, they are mistreating people that they consider less than them. Even though they're in the same tribe, you know, the ones that didn't have as much money or didn't have the same class or status, they were being just mean and nasty to them. And Habakkuk is observing all this, and he's kind of wondering what is going on. And so what's really interesting about Habakkuk versus all the other prophetic books is it's not like a correction of the Israelites. It's not a correction of the southern kingdom. You can almost equate Habakkuk kind of as like a lament. And so it's structured almost like a psalm. And so you have Habakkuk, the conversation we're going to get into, you know, he makes two complaints to God. And God gives him two answers, you know, in response to the complaints. And so Habakkuk brings his complaint, and then God answers it. You know, then he brings another complaint, and God answers that. And so it's very much like a poetic book. And then even at the end of the book, in chapter 3, he wraps it up with a song. So he's even a musician. And so as I was studying it and looking at Habakkuk, I'm like, I kind of dig this guy. This guy's pretty neat, you know, because I have to be honest, before looking into this, I hadn't read much about Habakkuk, you know. I mean, I had to look up how to say it correctly, right? You know, is it Habakkuk? Is it Habakkuk? You know, is it, do I just throw some saliva in the back of my throat, you know, and start with a buck, you know? I mean, and so it's one of those kind of obscure little books in the Bible, and if you're one that loves those little books, awesome, excellent, you know, I'm so excited about that. We're going to go ahead and dig into Habakkuk, okay? So Habakkuk has been observing Judah and all the wrong deeds and everything that they have been doing wrong, doing against what God is saying, okay? So let's start in chapter 1, and we're starting verse 2, and this is Habakkuk's first complaint to God, okay? And he says, "How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed, and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous, so the justice is perverted." See, he's been looking at Judah his entire life. And he's also been hearing about even history before that and how this slow degrade Judah has been going through to get to this state, you know. And, of course, he saw what happened to Israel. And, I mean, he's a smart guy. He's one of the prophets. And so he knows the history of the Israelites. You know, anytime the Israelites did something that where they disobeyed God, you know, God did something about it. He corrected it. All the way back even before the Israelite kingdom, you go back to, there's a book in the Bible called Judges, you know, and what would happen is Israel would worship some other gods, and then someone would come in and would fight them and take them over, and then God would raise up a judge, and the judge would come in, and he would free them. Yay, Israel's free again. And then they would do it all over again, and God would send another judge to come in and free them, and yay, Israel's free again, and they would do it all over again. So he kept seeing that pattern of how God would correct Israel. And then he's not being mean when he's correcting them. Okay, this isn't some, you know, some big guy with one of those magnifying glasses, you know, trying to burn ants, right? That's not what God is doing, okay? God is very intentional when he makes these corrections because these are his chosen people. You know, he's a dad to them. You know, as a kid, you know, when you get in trouble and you're punished, it's really easy to think of your parents as just being mean, right? But they're not, you know. We're not. I'm a parent. I'm not mean to my kids. You know, sometimes they might think I'm mean. But, you know, I'm correcting their behavior because I want them to be mature. I want them to be good citizens, you know, and I want them to have a great life. And I know that by correcting some of those behaviors, their future is going to be much better and much more brighter. So same thing with God. When he's coming in and he's correcting the Israelites, he's not just mean. He's not just this big, mean guy, you know, with a big old club waiting for Israel to goof up so we can smack him on the head. No, he's correcting them because he knows that they will have a much better and a much brighter future as long as they follow his commands and his laws. And so Habakkuk's been observing this. So he goes, God, what is going on? Why are you allowing all this to happen in Judah? Why all this violence that is happening? You know, they are worshiping idols. They are beating each other up. Will you not do something? And, you know, and God has, he gives his first answer. And I love how God gives his answers. He's just amazing. He knows how to deliver a line. All right, so let's look at the second portion. So Habakkuk 1, verse 5. And so he says to Habakkuk, he says, look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed. For I am going to do something in your days that you would not believe, even if you were told. I am raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth and seize dwellings not their own. You know, so I could just imagine kind of how this interchange is going. You know, Habakkuk is just pouring his heart out. God, violence, please do something. And God comes around and says, okay, check this out, all right? You're going to be utterly amazed. This is something that you have never seen before, and you're not even going to believe it if I tell you. And Habakkuk's like, ooh, what is it? You know, it's like, well, I remember one time there were, you know, flaming balls of hail that fell from the sky, and, you know, there were frogs, and I heard about all this really neat stuff you've done. And he goes, I am sending the Babylonians. Habakkuk's like, wait, the who? The Babylonians? It's like, yes, I'm sending the Babylonians. You know those ruthless people? And in fact, if we continue on in chapter 1, he even kind of, you know, puffs them up a little bit. He goes, oh yeah, those people, you know, their horses, they're like leopards. You know, they are ferocious like wolves at dusk. And the pastor's like, wolves at dusk, God? That sounds kind of harsh. You're like, oh, they're like eagles that swoop in, you know, and he's like talking up this army, these Babylonians. And Habakkuk, I could just imagine him sitting there thinking, the Babylonians, God? Really? The Babylonians? I don't know. I mean, it seems, you know, there might be other ways to do this. And Habakkuk has a reaction that I think a lot of us have. You know, when we ask God, when we go to him with something, you know, when we have a complaint, you know, and if you see, you know, in the Bible, you know, God really, he doesn't ever, you know, get mad at people for having a complaint, okay? So just kind of keep that in your back pocket. He doesn't get mad at people for having a complaint, all right? So he's not mad at Habakkuk for having a complaint, you know, and so he gives him this response to the Babylonians, and then Habakkuk, he has a response that I think a lot of us like to have when we don't quite get the answer that we're looking for. Okay, he kind of has this, almost like this knee-jerk reaction, okay? And so this one we find in the next verse in Habakkuk 1, verse 12. It says, Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up the more righteous than themselves? So the Babylonians, they were a real nasty group of people. Real nasty group of people. Okay? In fact, Their biggest pride, what they held pride in the most, was the fact that they had an amazing army. See, God wasn't lying when he said that their horses were like leopards and they were ferocious like wolves at dusk and they can swoop down like eagles and just snatch up, because they were a very ferocious army. They were, and they actually idolized that. They worshiped the fact that their own army was amazing, and that they could sweep in, and that they could just kind of demolish whatever they want. You know, God, you know, Habakkuk continues on, you know, and say, hey, these guys are, they're really nasty. You know, you're like giving them fish in a barrel. You know, they are, you know, the best scoffers. They can make fun of just about anybody, you know, and they just laugh at all the fortified cities. You know, they walk up to the walls, they laugh, they go in and they take it like it's no big deal. And so Habakkuk, he has this knee-jerk reaction. God, this isn't like you. This isn't you. You're not like this. How is it that you can look on evil and allow that to come in? You don't tolerate these bad things. You don't like to do it this way, God. You are not supposed to do it like this. Does that kind of sound maybe a little familiar? Like sometimes when we have a complaint to God or things aren't working out the way that we really want them to, we start telling God, oh, God, no. Let me tell you about who you are. You must be confused. You must be confused, Lord, because, you know, you don't look on evil. You don't tolerate wrongdoings. You're not one that acts like this. And so this, I mean, you're going to have to do it a different way, Lord, because, you know, obviously you had forgotten about what your own character is like. Right? But we do that, don't we? We do that. When our faith is challenged, when we're looking at something that doesn't seem right, and we pray and we pray and we pray, and it seems like the answer that's coming, man, is against what we think God should do in our lives. And we just kind of go, no, that's not it. That's not what we're supposed to do. That's not how you're supposed to work, God. That's ridiculous. Come on. Get with the picture. Get with the program. This isn't how this works. And we take this posture of, okay, God, I know what's best for my life. And I need you to conform to what I want and how I want things to go. That's not how it's supposed to work. That's not how faith is supposed to work. See, faith is not meant to drive us away from God. Faith is meant to drive us towards God. See, when we're in a situation and it seems like there's no right answer, or it seems like the answer that God is giving us isn't the answer that we're looking for, we should be running towards Him. We should not be running away from Him. And I love it because Habakkuk's response to this, oh, this is probably my favorite part of this, okay? And this is the key, you know? It's not because he had a complaint, you know? It's not because he even had a second complaint and he tried to correct God in his own character, okay? And God's still patient, you know? His next words aren't, you, Habakkuk, you are no longer going to be my servant because you doubted me, right? That's not what God does. He has this amazing grace that just kind of allows us, you know, to realize our own mistakes and our own goof-ups, which I am so grateful for, because I tell you what, in my own life, I tend to have a lot of mistakes and a lot of goof-ups. And between God and my wife and my kids, my family and friends and what have you, they give me a lot of grace, and I'm so extremely grateful for. And so Habakkuk, he takes on this kind of change. He changes his attitude, okay? And it tells us in chapter 2. So let's look at chapter 2, verse 1, to see what Habakkuk's response is. He says, okay. He says, I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me and what answer I am to give to this complaint. See, what he does is he doesn't get mad. You know, he doesn't run away from God, you know, as maybe some prophets before have when they don't get the answer that they're looking for. And that's happened. There's at least one famous individual I know who didn't get the answer he was looking for, just got mad and bitter. That's not what Habakkuk did. He went up to the ramparts. Now the ramparts, what that is that's around each city was a wall. Okay. And I know Pastor Andy, you know, he's talked a lot about this and other people have talked about it too, but these walls were massive and they're usually the highest part of the city. And so he went up onto the wall, onto the ramparts where he can like look out over everything, and he waited. He waited for God's answer. And if you're reading the New King James, or if you have your Bible app and it has that little square that you can click on, you know, it kind of gives you an or statement or what this other word can mean. It's amazing. I love this part. And so the next one says, it changes that last line a little bit. You know, it says, I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me and what to answer when I am rebuked. See, he realized, he understood. He's like, okay, all right. I believe in this great God. I've seen him do amazing things, you know. I mean, he talks to me. I mean, that's got to be worth something, right? And he changes his posture. You know, he goes from a, oh, God, I don't think you know what you're doing, to a, yeah, that probably wasn't the answer I was supposed to give. Probably wasn't the way I was supposed to do it. And he goes up and he waits. He's like, all right, God, here I am. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I had that response. I'm sorry I didn't trust you. I'm sorry for wanting to disobey. I'm sorry for puffing myself up and not exercising humility and thinking that I knew better than you. See, it's important where we get to after the fact. See, if we stay in complaint mode, if we stay in that posture, in that moment of where we think we are right and God is wrong, that drives us away. And that's not what faith is. Faith is active. Faith is very active. It's not a passive thing. But in those moments, if we could just, you know, change a little bit, if we could start recognizing, okay, true faith is that loving God, is that obedience, is that trusting him, is humility. Okay, if I do that, did I do any of those things? No, I did not do a single one of those things. But it's never too late. So I could change my mindset, I could change the way I'm thinking, and I can get in line. And I love it because God responds to that. He responds to those times. He responds to those instances where we have a change of heart, where we change our posture, and we change our attitude. And so let's see what God's second response is. So God says, he says this. He says, see, the enemy is puffed up. So he says, yes, I understand. I know. I know they're prideful. I know they put all their stock in their army. Okay? And we're going to deal with them later. Don't worry. We'll take care of them later. That's all right. Okay, he says, his desires are not upright, but the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. See, the righteous person will live by loving God. The righteous person will live by obedience. The righteous person will live by trusting God in his goodness and faithfulness. And the righteousness will live by humility. See, God recognized this change in Habakkuk. Habakkuk said, okay, I'm turning myself. This is what I'm doing. I'm gonna wait for my rebuke because I know what I said was wrong. He's like, and the righteous will live by his faithfulness. And this verse is even, it's quoted in the New Testament. Paul grabs onto this verse. You know, he quotes it in Romans and in Galatians, and it's also quoted again in Hebrews, that the righteous will live by faith. See, our faithfulness, it's interactive. God requires interaction between us and him. He requires that. Christianity is not a passive thing. I'm sorry, but if you just think that being a Christian means, you know, just coming to church and going home, and then coming to church and going home, you're missing out on so much of what God has for you. And here's the thing, though, is it's hard. Being a Christian is hard. I'm going to tell you that right now. Being a Christian is hard. It was never designed to be easy. I mean, how many things that are easy do we take for granted, right? It's easy to turn a light on. We just turn it on, right? And we don't even think about what it takes for that electricity to go from the source, either, you know, from a power supply like a dam or from solar, you know, to the power company, then through the roads, up to the transformer, then down back in the ground, over to the building, then up through the breaker box, down to the switch, so when we flip it on, that we get light, right? Because it's easy. And so we don't think about that, okay? So if all we're doing is we're just showing up to church and then we're going home, we're showing up to church, you know, we're taking our Christianity for granted. And that's not how God intended it to be. God is an interactive God. He requires responses from us. He doesn't do it all by himself, okay? And so faith isn't just sitting back and believing. It's just not sitting there going, all right, and just doing nothing. Faith is not sitting in the back seat and just looking out the window while God drives. Faith is a very active, active thing. And we need to be active in our faith. And so how does this work? How does this work then when we are challenged in our faith? How does this work when we're looking at our finances and the numbers don't add up? How does this work when we are sometimes face-to-face with another individual and they are challenging us verbally about things that we believe? How does this work? How does this work in our careers and in our relationships? Well, we should take on what Habakkuk did, okay? And what he did was that he looked up and then he looked it up. He looked up and then he looked it up, okay? Looking up is recognizing God. Okay, God, all right. Either I recognize that my way is not the way I'm supposed to do it, or I recognize that there's an area in my life that I might be really challenged in my faith, and I'm not very interested right now in getting that taken care of. Then the looking up part, this is another action part. The looking up part for Habakkuk back then was waiting for God's answer. And for us today, I want to make it a little bit more practical, okay? So looking it up today is digging into our Bibles, digging into the Word, and finding out, okay, so what has God said about my particular situation according to the Bible, according to the Word? I mean, that's why he gave it to us. That's why we have the Bible. You know, he didn't just let us to run off and, you know, kind of come up with our own things. He gave us the Bible. He gave us the Word as guidelines. He gave us the Word as something that we can hold on to, that we can grab truths out of, so that when we are challenged in our faith and when we do come across these difficult situations, that we have something that we can fall back on and that we have something we can hold on to. And so looking it up, see, when I was challenged in that chat room, I got mad. I mean, I got really mad. I left the chat room. And I was like, those non-Christians, those troublemakers, they're just wanting to stir up trouble. He doesn't know what he's talking about, or she, or whoever it is that was making those statements. They don't know what they're talking about. I had a year of Bible school. They're just trying to rattle our cages. I'm just, you know, forget that, you know. And so then I did what, you know, as sometimes Christians do, is I went and I started complaining to my other friends and my other Christians about this person in this chat room, you know, who thought they could be so sly, you know. And so I was kind of in a bad spot. Not only was I angry, but I was complaining. And I was, you know, and I went to one guy who at the time was a mentor of mine, and he's a reader. He read all the time, read everything. And so I said, you will not believe, I was in this chat room, you know, this guy dropped this question. He says, yeah, you know, is God in hell? And, you know, of course God isn't in hell. But then he talked about being omniscient and how can he be everywhere at all time. My buddy looked at me and he goes, yeah, sure, God's down there. It's like, what? He goes, yeah, in Psalms. David talks about, you know, where can I flee, God, where I could escape your presence? Even if I make my beds in the depths, you are there. I was stunned again. I was like, Wait a minute. So you mean there was an actual answer to that question? So you mean that just because I went to a year of Bible college, I don't know everything about the Bible, right? And so by looking up and looking it up, what we could do is then we can better equip ourselves when our faith is challenged with truth. And we replace those lies with the truth. So that's all challenges to our faith are, is they're lies. There are ways the enemy and people try to get and try to divide us and try to get into our faith and try to separate it so that we run from God instead of running to him. But if we make it a habit to run towards God instead of running away from God, you know, we will discover truths about these challenges and we go, all right, yeah, nice, I like that. That's great. That's so helpful. That's so wonderful. But the key is that we have to be able to do that. We need to be able to look up, and we need to be able to look it up. And so the next time you are challenged in your faith, just remember that. Just remember to look up and look it up.